pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs. But they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So the administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, "O King Darius, live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, and advisors and governors have all agreed the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, should be thrown into a lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so it cannot be altered, in accordance with the laws of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his hands and knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. "Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or man except to you, O king, would be thrown into a lion's den?" The king answered, "The decree stands in accordance with the laws of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed." Then they said to the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the decree that you put in writing. He still prays three times a day." When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to the king and said to him, "Remember, O king, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." May the Lord grant us a better understanding of these words. How many of you remember the Apple commercial that was really big back in the 1980s? It was all black and white. There was this line of people shuffling somewhere, and then there was this movie theater with this big face up on the screen. It was basically saying, "Obey, conform, do, buy stuff," I don't know. And this girl wearing what looked like a Hooters outfit came running through with a sledgehammer and spun around and threw it, and it smashed the screen. Anybody remember that one? You guys, nobody remembers that commercial? Nobody was watching TV in the 80s, all right. Well, I remember it, even though I was born at the end of the 80s, so... I saw a spoof on that commercial, somebody making fun of it. The girl comes up, and she throws the hammer, and it goes through the screen, and one of the people in the theater stands up and goes, "I was watching that!" If Nick were here, he'd know exactly where I got that from. But, but the whole idea was that Macintosh computers were going to come in, and they were going to break this hold over everybody that these other companies had. Of course, you know that Macintosh is now one of the biggest technology sellers in the world, and their basic stuff is to get you hooked on their products and then never let you go. So they kind of became the people who were telling you to obey and conform. Yeah, they have this thing called planned obsolescence, meaning your phone, if you get one of their $1,000 phones, will eventually just become useless. And it just won't keep going. That's why people line up around the corners to get the new one whenever it comes out, even though they got to pay another $1,000 for it or more.
They have a thing called fanboys. But something like what was going on in that commercial was going on with Darius and his people there. He was telling them, you may only bow down and worship me for 30 days. It wasn't like an eternal decree. It was just for 30 days. And they did this a couple of times to Daniel and his friends. They also had the thing where they built the big monument and said that everybody had to bow down and worship that monument. You guys remember these things? But this one with Daniel, they were trying to set a trap for Daniel. They knew Daniel was too good. And as, I don't know if Daniel himself wrote his book or if somebody else wrote it about him. If he wrote it himself, it's awful self-serving because he looks really there in the whole book. The whole thing, when he's a teenager, him and his buddies, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're better looking and are doing better than all the other people. Then when he's appointed an administrator, he's doing better than everybody, so he gets appointed over the whole kingdom. Daniel just makes But Daniel decides that even though he's been appointed all this stuff, he's going to go against the king's rule. And you see this in the book of Esther, at the same thing as you see with Daniel, the whole idea of once the king puts his stamp on something, even the king can't take it back. Esther, it was the whole thing of, you know, they're going to go and they're going to wipe out all the Jews. And the king had put his stamp on it, and Esther goes and appeals to the king, and the king goes, oh, well, I already put my stamp on it. I can't do anything about it. Esther says to him, well, make a new one. That happens 2 days before the one you're supposed to do. And then, if you remember the ending of the book of Esther, it really works out for the people of Israel. But Daniel doesn't have anything like this done. It says the king tries. He tries to come up with some way because the king really likes Daniel. I mean, Daniel is so good at running the kingdom for him. It's kind of like Joseph in the Old Testament part of before Exodus, at the end of the book of Genesis, when Joseph comes in and he's a slave. He's been in prison. And the king brings him out as an ex-con and says, okay, I'm going to put you in charge of my whole kingdom. Second only to Pharaoh. Good things tend to happen to the Jews who are doing everything they're supposed to. Daniel decides to pray, and the king tries to save him, but he ends up getting thrown into the lion's den, and everybody knows what happens next. In fact, I sang part of it in the song up here. Daniel is still there the next morning, not a scratch on him. He's fine. And you know what? The king actually bows down and worships the God of Israel, because Daniel comes out of the lion's den okay. It could not have been easy. Daniel goes up to his room and prays 3 times. And he does so in such a way that he knows people are going to notice. Because seriously, how many of your coworkers, how many of your relatives, how many casual acquaintances, friends, have really seen you every day get into your prayers? Or exhibited some Christian action that goes against the culture somehow? How many of them, this is the old question, if there was a court that was drawn up and you were accused of being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict? You've all heard that one before? Well, Daniel knew that he had enough evidence to convict him. And he went and he did it anyway in a place where the people would be able to see him. It says he goes into his house and he prays facing Jerusalem with the windows open, so that anybody who comes by can just look in and go, yep, there he is praying again. And the satraps and the governors and the prefects had all seen him do that. I feel like it's kind of like Jesus when he's walking around and there's this small army of Pharisees following him around, making sure he's doing everything right. Because that's how it is all the way through the Gospels. There's always this group of Pharisees checking him. It's like every time President Trump gives a speech, there's always fact checkers following him around going, did he get this right? Did he get this right? Did he get this right? Same thing happened with Obama and Bush and everybody back. But Daniel has these people following him around, trying to catch him. Trying to catch him doing something wrong. And so he just does it anyway. He says, well, if they're going to catch me, they're going to catch me. I'm going to go pray to my God. Daniel does this, and I told you a little bit earlier, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, his buddies, you know about the fire furnace, right? They go and they set up, the king sets up this giant monument middle of a valley and brings all these people around to bow down to it. And when everybody bows down, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are still standing. Like three tall blades of grass on the green of a golf course. You're bound to notice. How many of you golf? I have golfed. I don't know if I would say I golf. You know greens, the greens on the golf courses? The grass is like less than a millimeter high. I don't know how they do it. There's very special kinds of grass that they use. It almost feels like moss on there. It's cut so low and everything, and the ball just kind of whisks right across it. Imagine if there were three, I don't know, cat's tails just sticking right up next to the hole. Somebody would notice, right? You bet the groundskeeper would get a pretty angry response to that. But there they are, standing up in the middle of the field. Everybody else is down on their faces. Three people just standing up. I've seen a picture of what it must look like. And there's another saying that says, the tallest blades of grass are the first ones to get cut by the lawnmower. Anybody ever heard that phrase before? They're the tall blades of grass sticking out. They're the sore thumb in the crowd. And Daniel and his buddies both did this at different times. Daniel knows that he's going to get caught, knows that he's going to get thrown in. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego know that by standing up like this, they're going to get fed to the fire. But they trust enough in God that they're not afraid. Now, I have been a Christian pretty much my whole life. And I have met a lot of other Christians. And I've met other pastors, and I've worked in other churches. And I have seen lots of people who would not be able to do this. Who would not be able to stand out in the crowd. Who would not be able to continue praying if they knew they were going to get caught. We like to idolize the heroes of the faith who stood up for what they believed in. People like Bonhoeffer. People like St. Augustine. People who were martyred for their faith. But we don't talk about everybody else who didn't stand up. Who bowed down, who gave in when the going got tough. And you know, it's part of humanity. Fear is easy to give into. All those people who bowed down, of course, Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have an excuse, is that everybody else was not Jewish. And that they were Jews. But fear is easy to give into. Fear is something that's built inside of us. God put it inside of us that basically say, if a tiger is running at you and is going to eat your face off, you run. You either get out of there, or you grab a sharp stick and you try to fight the tiger off. The fight or flight reflex. And over time, it has gone from being a somebody's going to kill you because of your faith to more of a subtle thing in the world. Now, if you believe in Jesus and you act like you believe in Jesus, then maybe you won't get the next job that you apply for. If you believe in Jesus and you act like you believe in Jesus, well, maybe one of your friends isn't going to want to be your friends as much. Maybe you won't be able to. I don't know. We've seen a couple of places where people are sued because they won't do something for somebody. I think it was Mike Huckabee got fired because he's a Christian. He got appointed to the position, or he accepted the position, volunteer position, of the Country Music Association of America. And this big group rose up and said, we don't want him because he's an outspoken Christian. So he quit. You can look up all the reasons for it later, but it was because he was a Christian. They didn't want him in there. There are lots of times when doing the right thing or following Jesus in the right way will seem to the outside world to be the wrong thing to do. Maybe you won't get as much business, or you won't make as much money in your business if you're going to be honest instead of trying to fleece people. Maybe people won't want to work with you if they know that they can't get away with things around you. Maybe somebody won't want to work with you because you don't swear like a sailor. And they do. And it makes them uncomfortable. I know during college it was the whole thing of people didn't want me to come with them to the college parties because I didn't drink. And it made the drunks really uncomfortable to have a sober guy there. I don't know what the deal was. They're all getting red-eyed and red-cheeked, and they're looking at me like, what's wrong with you? Have one! When I worked at Pizza Hut, they were constantly trying to get me weed. And I was like, no, I don't want any. And they're like, what's wrong? Why aren't you like us? You need to be like us.
Join us, friends.
Yeah. That's how society works. And it's easy to give into that when it seems like everybody else is doing it. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7 says, I gave you the Holy Spirit so that you would not be timid, but instead have the spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline. I like to shorten that down. We were not given a spirit of fear, but we were given a spirit of power. We were given a spirit of love and self-discipline. Without the self-discipline, it's really hard to exercise the power, the love. But we were given that spirit so that we would be conquerors and not the conquered. That no matter what is done to us, I love reading. I was just given several books for Christmas from the Voice of the Martyrs catalog. They're about people who have gone through problems with their missionaries, or whether they were, one of them's another biography of Richard Wurmbrand. And it's stories about what they did when they were captured by the enemy, when they were imprisoned, and when they've been going through horrible things in their lives, and I can't wait to dig into them. But I've got to finish the book I'm already reading, or the 16 books I'm already reading. But it's just wonderful to read the witness of somebody else who have gone through the fire and said, yes, you can go through the fire and come out the other side. And if you are faithful to God, then God will lift you up all the way through because he gave you that spirit of power. Now, as we're going into this next year, as Katie said, with the children, a lot of people approach a new year with trepidation, like what problems is this year going to bring to me? Am I going to be able to make ends meet? Am I going to be able to be healthy? Am I going to be able to survive even? Am I going to be able to keep up the Christian witness as the world seems to slip farther and farther away from Jesus? And I say, we were made to be more than conquerors. We were made to look at that new year and go, yes, this is the year we're going to seize it and we're going to defeat it for Jesus. We're going to take this new year, and I don't care what's going on in Washington, D.C. I don't care what's going on in the court systems. I'll still watch it on TV, but whatever. I don't care what's going on in the popular sphere. I care what I do with my life and how I'm going to take hold of this world for Jesus, and I'm going to spread the good news. And I'm going to act like a Christian, and I'm going to show people that there is still good and love in this world, and that it can come from somebody who holds a Bible and wears a cross. Our world has been stripped down by people who proclaimed that they were talking in Jesus' name, but then we're just in it for the money. Our world has been attacked by people who don't even know Jesus at all and are just blowing up stuff willy-nilly. Or living for themselves, or falling into drugs and alcohol, and doing all these things. But what we're going to do as Christians is we're going to say we have that power. We have the promises, we have the rock to stand on, and we're going to take the world by force if we have to. I love it when Jesus says, up until now, the kingdom of heaven was made for people, and they were taking it by force, and strong men were taking it by force. And he basically just leaves it at that and says, okay, keep going. Keep taking it by force. One thing that I'm going to do is we get sent out 39 more new mover mailers this month. They should be arriving in the next couple of weeks at people's houses. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go start visiting those people. I have the list of addresses. I'm going to go as part of my visitation and try to hit each of those houses, each of those apartments, and start inviting those people to church. I would love it if somebody else would come with me. Why? Because when somebody from the congregation goes and says, I want to invite you to my church, it's an awesome church, it sounds more genuine than the pastor saying, you know what, the sermons are awesome. There's a soloist who gets up there every once in a while and he's part of a men's group and they're really good. You know? It sounds a little self-serving coming from me. But I'll let everybody know when I'm going to be doing these. And I'm going to be trying to go out once a week at least in the evening or afternoon and trying to invite these people into the church. And I love that because they give me a list of addresses of people that I know for sure don't already have a home church here in town. I could just go up and down the street and I'm sure everybody would be like, yeah, we already go to this place or that place, or, you know, 50% of them would be going to the Catholic church. I know a couple of people over there who go to the Assembly of God church. When we took cookies out with the youth group, we actually got prayed over by a couple of people. That was great. But the whole thing is, Daniel and those friends of his, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, could have given in to fear. They could have said, yes, we have this God, but you know, they have swords. And we can see the swords, but we can't see what God's going to do for us. But instead they say, no, I'm going to trust. God has given me these promises. He's been good to me so far. I'm going to rest in his loving arms. I'm going to lean on his promises and accept them. Well, here's the thing. This is the reason I called this sermon Same Things. God has not changed any of those promises. And God has not changed in the last 2,000 years. He is still faithful today as before. And if you lean on his promises, he is faithful to make them true in your life. I'm not saying he's going to put a BMW in your driveway. But he is faithful to keep you in his power and in his Holy Spirit and make the things that you do for him succeed. So don't just accept the life that you were given or the life that you've been living before. If you have things that you need to do for God, be a conqueror. He is going to make it succeed. Amen.